You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Thursday, January 3rd, 2019. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, and please leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. We're back after a little break I took after the new year. It is Thursday, which means we'll be doing a mailbag show as the Jets continue their coaching search. These are questions submitted through the comment section of gangrenenation.com. First question, who's your head coach choice? Of the current list of reported interviewees, whom do you favor? I'd go with McCarthy. I understand his weaknesses, but he would bring some desperately needed respectability and professionalism, and that's an important foundation. My first choice, I think, and you know, when I evaluate these guys, it's not like I'm comparing Eric Mangini versus Rex Ryan versus Todd Bowles, where I've watched every single game these guys coach for years. So, you know, I'm going based on, you know, what I know about these guys, what I'm doing, researching them. I think right now my number one choice would be Todd Monken, who is the Buccaneers offensive coordinator. There's a lot that I like about him. He was kind of a football lifer. He's bounced back and forth between college and the pros. Most of his experience is college, but you know, lots of coaching experience, has gotten his gotten a background in the NFL over the last decade or so. Pretty creative offensive mind, has been exposed to a lot of the new wave of offensive innovations because of his experience in college. Brief stint as a head coach, which his record was 13-25, but you know, you can't always look straight at record. You also have to look at trajectory. He was hired at Southern Miss after the team had won zero games. By year three, he had them at 9-5. So, you know, did a good job in his one head coaching stint. You know, then moved to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so he's got experience calling, you know, being an offensive guy in the NFL, an offensive coach. So I think he'd be my number one. I'd probably put McCarthy number two. And I'll be honest with you, I was kind of lukewarm on McCarthy after he was fired by Green Bay, because he was a name who came up immediately. I didn't love him because of the way his Green Bay stint ended. I'm warming to the idea of McCarthy. You know, I think he is a decent coach. I can buy into the idea he needs a fresh start. But here's the thing about McCarthy is that, you know, if we're going to say he needs a fresh start, that means he actually has to start fresh. That means he's got to expand his horizons a little bit and bring in a staff with new ideas. Don't bring Joe Philbin. Don't bring the old Green Bay crew over here. Bring in a staff with new, fresh ideas on offense. That's one of the things he's got to do. He's got to update his offense. His offense has become stale. It's become outdated. So, you know, if you're going to tell me McCarthy's, it's going to be a fresh start, well, it's got to be, that means, it means he's got to bring new people in. It's not a fresh start unless he brings new people in. So McCarthy, I think right now, would be my second choice, but because I do think there are some positives with him. I think third, I'd go with Chris Richard, who was defensive coach with the Cowboys. Pretty good coach, you know, lots of success. He was the position coach for the Legion of Boom up in Seattle when that unit kind of came into prominence. So he's doing a good job with Dallas. So I think he's a solid choice. My fourth choice, and I think there's a gap between the top three and number four, and I think that's Eric. Number four is Eric Bieniemy for me, who's the Chiefs offensive coordinator, who's really just kind of a wild card. Nobody really knows what he brings to the table. He's got 1 year of experience as offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, and nobody really knows how much of a role he has, because obviously Andy Reid is the guy in charge in Kansas City, who's a very creative offensive mind in his own right. So, you know, you can't ignore how much success the Chiefs have had. The fact that a couple of Reid's old offensive coordinators have gone and been pretty successful head coaches works in his favor. The fact that, you know, he's got that background in the Kansas City system works in his favor. We don't know what are his leadership skills, so you know, that those are questions, but I think Bieniemy would be my number four choice. My number five choice, and again, you know, there's a gap between three and four, and then I think there's a gap between four and five. Number five, I think I would go with Jim Caldwell, who I just think is a thoroughly average coach. I don't want him. I remember a few years ago I had the opportunity to interview Keyshawn Johnson, the former Jets receiver, and I remember he said something that I agreed with. He said, you know, in the NFL, there are a handful of guys who really make a difference for who really make a difference, make their team better. There are things they do as a coach that they clearly improve their team. And then there are a handful of coaches who just stink, who make their team worse, but with their presence. Most of these guys don't really make a difference. And that's kind of how I view Caldwell. I think Caldwell's the definition of an average coach. I don't think he makes his team worse, but I don't think he's ever done anything to make a team better. I mean, I think his most notable contribution in his coaching career was that timeout he called in the playoff game against the Jets in 2010. You know, you give him Peyton Manning, who's playing well, and, you know, he'll win you a lot of games. You take Peyton Manning off the Colts in 2011, and you'll have with a bad roster, he'll give you the number one pick. You have a good but not great Detroit roster, you'll get some 9-win seasons. I mean, I don't see what he brings to the table. So Caldwell would be my fifth choice. My sixth choice, I think, would be Adam Gase, who just emerged yesterday as a candidate. I mean, for me, Gase is kind of Jim Harbaugh without all of Jim Harbaugh's personality issues without the winning. I mean, he's driven a lot of talented players off that team. If you've read about what the situation was in Miami, he alienated a lot of people in the locker room. Just Jim Harbaugh's ability to alienate people without Jim Harbaugh's ability to win games. I mean, that's how I view Adam Gase. And then number seven, I think, and this is just one that, and he's not, I can't view him as a viable candidate, is Cliff Kingsbury, who, you know, if you want to make him the quarterback's coach or the offensive coordinator, that's fine. And if you're interviewing him, I was listening to FAN yesterday, and Evan Roberts said it perfectly. He said, you know, if you're interviewing Cliff Kingsbury because you're thinking maybe he's an offensive coordinator, and that, you know, you hire Mike Carthy, say, Mike, you know, you can build your own staff, but we like this guy. Why you know, if you're interested, this is a guy we might recommend. And if McCarthy goes, yeah, you know, it's a good idea. I see why you interview him, but I mean, pretty much everything. If you followed Texas Tech, and I was always a big Mike Leach fan, the coach who used to be the coach at Texas Tech, very innovative offensive guy. I was always a big fan of his. So Texas Tech is one of those schools that I follow in college football. I mean, everything about Cliff Kingsbury, everything about his performance at Texas Tech suggests that he was in over his head as the head coach at Texas Tech. So I can't envision him coming to the NFL, coming to the Jets, and being a good choice to be a head coach. You know, Kingsbury was a guy who he was not ready to be a head coach in college when he got that job. He was only 33. And I mean, the biggest reason he got hired, I think, was that he was a legend. He was a legendary quarterback at that school as a player, so I think that played into it. He's a good offensive mind, and I think, you know, one day down the road, I wouldn't be surprised to see him be a good coach. But I really doubt he's ready to be an NFL coach right now. So I think that's kind of, and my opinion could change, because, you know, my opinion on some of these guys has shifted over the last few weeks. Like McCarthy, I was down on the idea before. I don't love McCarthy, but I'm not as down on the idea as I would. I would like to see the search expand, though. I mean, I don't see enough candidates that I love. I think there are a lot of good candidates out there I'd like to see the Jets talk to. So it seems like this search is constantly expanding. We got Gase as a new name yesterday. There are a few other names I'd like to see. And, you know, the other thing I'll say about Gase is I don't think the Jets should hire him, but I do, again, I can understand why you want to interview him. Because, you know, he did coach the Dolphins, so I do see some value in gaining the perspective of a guy who was a division rival. I understand that. That's not a guy I would hire, though. So that's kind of where my head is at now on this coaching search. Next question. Do you agree the next head coach should have a background with the offense? It seems overemphasized. I want a good leader, delegator, communicator, and motivator who is organized regardless of whether his strength is with the offense or the defense. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think you're absolutely right about that. I think, I really do think that there's kind of a misunderstanding about what you want in a head coach. Too frequently, people list the skills that they want, and there's the skills of a coordinator. You go out and you hire the coordinator to implement the offense and implement the defense. And yeah, if you have skills on one particular side of the ball, then you can help that side, whether it's offense, that's nice, but that's exactly right. You need a guy who has organizational skills, a guy who has leadership skills, a guy who knows how to hire. Like, when you're the head coach, you have so much on your plate. You've got to manage personalities. You've got to, you know, manage the coaches. You have to run the game. There's just so much. You have to delegate so much. So I think, for me, one of the most important traits is just hiring a good staff. It doesn't matter if you're an offensive or defensive, you know, head coach, if you have a background on the offensive or defensive side of the football. I mean, look how many good quarterbacks have developed under head coaches who started as defensive coordinators. You have Brady in New England, developed under Belichick. You have Ben in Pittsburgh, who developed under Cowher and Tomlin. You have Russell Wilson, developed under Pete Carroll. You have Matt Ryan, developed under Mike Smith. You could just go through up and down the league. There's no real correlation to the type of background the head coach has and the way the quarterback develops. And you know something? I'm even going to say something else. Yes, I think it's important. I think the whole Sam Darnold thing, I think you have to have a plan for Sam Darnold. But I actually think we're getting to the point where this is getting a little overemphasized. I mean, if Sam Darnold's as good as he's advertised to be, he's going to be successful in this league. And it's not going to matter who the Jets hire as coach. And I think we're getting to the point where, I don't want to say it's unimportant, but I think we're getting to the point where it's becoming kind of absurd, the idea that, you know, this is the only thing that will matter. The only thing that will matter is if the Jets hire the coach the Jets hire will be the determining factor in whether Sam Darnold's a success. The only factor in whether Sam Darnold has a successful career. I think we're getting a little carried away with that. I think it's important. I think I want a coach with a plan for Sam Darnold. But yeah, a defensive coach can have a plan for Sam Darnold. And you know, I've said this before. People say, well, if you hire a defensive coach, he'll bring in an offensive coordinator. Well, what happens if that offensive coordinator gets hired as a head coach? You get a new offensive coordinator. What kind of a garbage organization are you if the most important person on your team is the offensive coordinator? I mean, I've seen plenty of great quarterbacks succeed when the offensive coordinator moves somewhere else. It's not like it's impossible to continue having a successful offense. It's not like it's impossible to find a good offensive coordinator. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. I think the Jets need to – this is not about which side of the ball you're from. There are plenty of offensive coordinators who get the head coaching job and stink, and their quarterbacks don't develop under them. Heck, I'll give you two examples. There are two recent examples in the NFL where a team promoted an offensive coordinator because they wanted continuity for their quarterback. It was Tampa Bay with Dirk Cutter. And it was the Giants with Ben McAdoo. And you know, I think a lot of those two hires were based on the idea that you wanted your quarterback to continue in the same system. Well, it didn't work out, and neither team was successful under the new coach. So you need somebody who's going to be able to run a franchise, be the leader of your franchise. Next question. How desirable of a landing spot do you think the Jets are for a head coaching candidate in relation to other teams in need of a head coach? And what do you make of so few people wanting to interview with Arizona? You know, I don't know. Honestly, I don't really know why nobody wants to interview with Arizona. It's kind of odd. I don't know enough about that. It seems like a decent enough. I mean, they don't have a lot of talent, but you have Rosen and you have the number one pick. I think it's very subjective, because what works for one person, what's attractive to one person isn't attractive to another person. So I think it's difficult to say how desirable the Jets are. You know, one person may really want to live in the New York area, and another person, you know, if somebody who's from the Midwest may say, you know what, I'd rather live in Cleveland. So, I mean, there are all these factors that where it's just so subjective that you can't really say. I think, you know, in broad terms, typically having a quarterback is something that makes the job attractive. So I think the Jets are attractive from that standpoint. Having a good roster makes the job attractive. Jets are not so attractive from that standpoint. Having cap space will help. That's a good thing for the Jets. Having Mike Maccagnan will probably be somewhere between neutral and negative, because we don't know what his job status is going forward. So do you want to work with a GM who may be fired in a year? That may be a negative, but we don't. I mean, it's tough to, maybe Maccagnan has a friend and then Maccagnan becomes a positive. You know, there's so many subjective things. I do feel like this is probably one of the better jobs. I think if it was me, and again, this is purely my own view, I think Cleveland, Green Bay probably would be the top two, and I think you could argue the Jets are third. You know, Green Bay because you have Rodgers, Cleveland because you have Mayfield and a better roster than the Jets have right now. I'd say those are the top jobs. I think you could make a case the Jets are third because of Darnold, but you know, again, it comes down to your own individual perspective. It comes down to what do you want. So I think those are some of the things that matter. Next question. John, I know it's obvious that highly skilled players don't grow on trees, and it looks like Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown may be available shortly. I know a lot of Jets fans who seem to want Bell and Brown, but despite their abundant skills, I'm concerned their effect on the culture of the team. Remember Santonio, Wilkerson, etc. After all, if Bell and Brown were problems for a winning organization like Pittsburgh, it's not unreasonable to think that they would be problematic here, unless, of course, the Jets hire a Parcells Coughlin-type disciplinarian. But with a second-year quarterback and possibly a younger head coach, I could see things getting dicey, especially if the team is not winning. What are your thoughts? I think there's something to that. You know, I think back to the team across town, Eli Manning, and how the team they never really became Eli's team until they got rid of Jeremy Shockey. You know, once Jeremy Shockey was a problem with that team, and you know, you think back to Santonio. And I don't think that that was the determining factor in Mark Sanchez's failure, but it certainly doesn't help when you have a young quarterback who needs to take control of the locker room, and he's asking a receiver to go run routes with him, extra routes with him, so they can work on their timing, and Holmes is blowing him off. So, yeah, I mean, there is something to that. There's always the question. You always put up with more problems for a talented guy because they produce. I mean, why did the Giants put up with Odell? Despite all of those problems, because he goes out there and produces. So, you know, I think there's a balance to be struck. When the problem is that right now the Jets really don't have enough talent. So, you know, do you roll the dice on these guys? It's tough to, you know, I think it's a factor. I'm not sure it's necessarily the only factor, though, because you're also, you know, you need talent, but you're also trying to build a winning atmosphere. And I think it's a good point that if these guys have been trouble, these guys have been problems in winning locker rooms, you do have to wonder what they'll be like in losing locker rooms. So I don't think that there's a definitive answer. I think it's something you have to consider. I'm not sure it necessarily makes the final determination, though. I will say this about Brown, though. I don't think the Jets have the pieces to get. Even if the Steelers were to put Brown on the trade block, Jets. I don't think the Jets have the pieces to do it. The Jets don't really have assets that are attractive in a trade. They don't have a second round pick, unless you want to trade the number 3 overall pick for Brown, which I think would be a really bad idea. The Jets can be outbid by anybody because they don't have a second round pick. So, you know, I don't think Brown's really going to be on the table for the Jets. I think Bell obviously will be on the table. He'll be looking for a big deal, and there are lots of factors. There are lots of factors that are going to go into Bell, whether it's, you know, how good he is, the help he brings as a receiver, and then on the negative side, the wear and tear he's got on that body already, the relative ease with which you should be able to get a good running back. The suspension history, there's lots that go into these decisions. So I think these are just, when you make a pro and con list of each player, I don't think that these locker room issues are necessarily the only thing you consider. I think they're just one of the things that goes on the list as a con for these two guys. Our next question. After Bowles was fired, one report stated the front office believes the talent on the team is better than thought, and because the Jets went into the fourth quarter of many games, either in the lead or within a touchdown of the lead. The supposition is that poor coaching and adjusting that led the Jets to never being able to close out games. Is there any validity to this? There's a small amount of validity from the standpoint that, yes, there were some poor coaching decisions which negatively impacted, some lack of adjustments that impacted the Jets in the fourth quarter of these games. That's not a valid theory. I mean, it's not a valid theory to say that the Jets have better talent because they were close in the fourth quarter of the game, though. It's just ridiculous. Honestly, it's ridiculous. Like, half the games in the NFL are decided by one touchdown or less. Take the worst team in the league, and you're going to find that they played a bunch of games that were close in the fourth quarter. It's the front office trying to sell that just shows you how ridiculous this, just how clueless this organization is at the top. The fact they're trying to sell that playing a bunch of games that are close in the fourth quarter. Every team plays a bunch of games that are close in the fourth quarter. I mean, it's just the most nonsensical thing I've ever heard, the idea that this team has more talent because it was playing a bunch of close games. I mean, I don't want to go on another. I don't want to go on a big rant today, but if this team is saying that, these people are just clueless. They don't know anything about the NFL. Yes, better coaching could have swung a few games. Well, so could have better talent. You know, I think I said this on the show earlier this week. You get a big time pass rusher who can get a sack in a key spot in the fourth quarter to close out a game. You get a playmaking receiver who can, you know, break something big in the fourth quarter of a game. You get an offensive line who can protect in the fourth quarter of a game. Yeah, those things would have mattered too. You don't think those things would have mattered in a close game? I mean, I can't get over that. They're trying to sell that this team has more talent than people think because they played a bunch of close games in the fourth. Everybody plays a bunch of close games in the fourth quarter. I'm not directing this at the person who asked this. Directing at the Jets management for trying to make such a ridiculous claim. Next question, would the Jets be better off with Darnold or a combination of Cousins, Bradley Chubb, and 3 second rounders? I think Darnold, I think Cousins was fool's gold in free agency last year. I think you'd be stuck in a big contract right now with Cousins with no hope at the quarterback position. I mean, I would like to have 3 second rounders. I'd like to have, you know, an edge rusher, but you're pretty much in no man's land with if Kirk Cousins is on this team right now. And, you know, it just shows you McKagan has kept his job essentially by failing, because you think about how the Jets ended up with Darnold. They essentially had to get a quarterback last year because the Hackenberg pick was such a disaster. And they went after Cousins. They tried to get Cousins. And if they get Cousins, McKagan's probably fired. Well, Cousins wasn't interested because McKagan did such a terrible job building the roster. So they end up with Darnold. So this GM has essentially saved his job by being so bad that he fell into a decision which seems decent. Just amazing. I think the Jets are better off with Darnold. Next question. Do you think there's any reason to be optimistic about McKagan moving forward? Let's write off the first 2 years. The big splashes and veteran signings were clearly a mistake, but do you think there are signs he's learned from his experience and that he'll be better in the next 2 years than he was in the last 2 years? Well, you can't write off the first 2 years. I mean, he was the general manager there, and he had two draft classes, and neither of the draft classes were good. I mean, the team's gone backwards. The team went from 10 to 5 to 5 to 4 wins. So I don't see a lot of – and you can't blame the coaching, because the coaching was the same all 4 years. You had Todd Bowles all 4 years, and the win-loss record's gotten worse. So what's the reason to be optimistic? I mean, sometimes inexplicable things happen in sports. Sometimes guys just suddenly get better. So I guess that's what you have to hope for. I mean, I don't think there's anything tangible, though, that suggests McKagan's going to start getting better. I mean, I think there are serious problems with the way he does business. I think it's not luck. I think there are just issues with the way he approaches roster building. And I've talked about some of the way he does not value draft picks properly. And I think, you know, you look at this Jets scouting staff, they've done an objectively really bad job in the draft with how many players have just been guys who have been off the team very quickly and out of the league. So you just have to hope he gets better. I mean, there's nothing, I don't think there's anything tangible there. Sometimes weird stuff happens. Sometimes guys just improve. They figure it out. Maybe the fact that he had this brush with losing his job, you know, I'm sure he had to have been worried at some point when you look at how many of his moves have failed, how poorly the team has played. Maybe he said, you know what, I need to start doing things better. Maybe he'll start changing his approach. I mean, you just have to hope for these things. Next question, what did you see from Derek Jones in the last game? Anything promising? Did he at least look better than Robinson? Never understood why Bowles kept him inactive all season. I thought he played okay. Jones is a tough guy to judge in that game because this happens kind of frequently, is you don't know whether it's him playing well or whether it's just the fact the Patriots did not go after him because they were having so much success going everywhere else. So, and that's something that happens. I can think of plenty of times where guys looked good for the Jets, and that's just because the other team wasn't going after them. I mean, there were a couple D. Milner games like that where I remember there was one game in San Diego a few years ago where D. Milner did not give anything up. Well, it wasn't because D. Milner was great. It was just because the Chargers were having so much success going elsewhere that there was no reason to go after Milner. So I don't know. I mean, I think he played okay. I think he'll be back in camp next year, but I mean, it's tough to judge, especially on one game. I mean, it is only one game. So I think that it's a little tough to come up with that. It's tough to say. And our last question, we moaned for Woody Johnson to sell the Jets. We moaned about McKagan's job performance, and we moaned about Bowles for years until he got fired. Why does nobody moan about Neil Glatt to be fired? He's been with the Jets since 2012 and no playoffs. Well, because Glatt has nothing to do with the roster that the Jets build. Glatt has nothing to do with the coaching staff. Glatt deals with business. You know, in the NFL, you have your football side, which is the side responsible for building the team and competing. Glatt deals with the business side, which are like, you know, how does the team make money? You're talking about tickets, you're talking about events, stuff like that. Glad has no control over what happens on the field. Glad has nothing to do with the on-field product. He's all about the business side, making money for the team. So it's not, this really has, what's happening with the Jets really has nothing to do with Glad. I don't think there's anything to blame on, anything to pin on him. He has no say over who the, you know, he really doesn't have much say over who the coach is. I mean, he was in those interviews 4 years ago, but really it was only to provide a business perspective in case the GM candidates had any questions about the business side of the operation. He was not running things there. So, you know, Glad's a guy who I actually see Glad get, I actually disagree with the question from the standpoint, I see lots of people blaming Glad, and I think it's kind of unfair because, again, he has nothing to do with the product the Jets are putting on the field. He's purely about money. He's purely about the business side of the operation. He's not negotiating the contracts. He's not scouting. He's not making decisions on who's playing. He's not hiring any of the football people. This has nothing to do with Neil Glad. That's all for our show today. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, and please leave the show a good review in iTunes. Hope you have a great Thursday. We'll be back again tomorrow.